Soy goes.
Who's the most fun to drink with of the Republican lawmakers?
Soy goes.
Todd also confirmed that Robin Voss has virtually no sense of humor.
Soy goes. You can always let us know if you are drinking with lawmakers at 844-967-2789.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the noon hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, she is Jane Madinaire, and we are rolling through today's show. Coming up at the half hour of this hour... We're going to be talking about the Milwaukee Zoo and
yes.
their hiring and
yes.
some of their egg day and such. And then at 1 p.m., Representative Mark Pocan will be here, and we will find out if he is indeed the funniest politician in Wisconsin, like we were promised. We'll also talk about Medicare Advantage and why it's a sneaky name.
Yeah.
It's a little more serious.
Yes.
But to get started, this segment, it's been about over a month. It's been like a month and a half since the train derailment in Ohio, which we've talked to John Russell a lot about. And I think it made a lot of us more aware of the train tracks
Absolutely.
That we pass and the trains that go by us and if those could potentially derail. But, you know, it caused, I think, leaders and community members across the country in different areas to be more vigilant about what happens when there's toxic spills. Not everyone.
No, shockingly, not everyone.
Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, WMC, the largest business lobbyist firm.
Group
is, they're currently suing the state over something called the Spills Law, which is an environmental public health protection that's been on the books since 1978. So here to talk more about what that law is and what it protects and what the lawsuit is Rob Lee, who is a staff attorney at Midwest Environmental Advocates. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Well, good afternoon, Kristen and Jane. Thanks so much for having me.
We're excited so excited to have
here.
You. So
yeah,
I guess let's start at the beginning. And what is the spills law?
Yeah, a great question. I think a lot of people around the state probably aren't aware of our state's spills law, right? Because it's kind of been humming along in the background, as you say, since 1978 and doing what it's supposed to do, right? A lot of times when you hear about things, it's when things go wrong, like mm-hmm. what happened in Ohio. But certainly it has been operating since 1978. And is a bedrock environmental law requiring people, businesses, other entities responsible for discharging toxic or hazardous substances into the environment to first report it to our state Department of Natural Resources, and then, of course, clean it up. Right now, there's a whole lot more to it than that. So I might just give you some broad strokes
yeah.
to help set us up for further discussion here as we start talking about the case. But you'll see when we talk about the case, the issue really revolves around the definition of hazardous substance in the spills law. And the legislature way back in 1978 defined that really broadly to make sure that it encompassed any substance that might pose a threat to public health or the environment when discharged based on maybe the characteristics of that substance, maybe the concentration or the volume at which it's discharged, and of course the site-specific characteristics of where the discharge occurs. All of those things could factor in, right? And it sort of makes sense when you look at the commands of the law itself, right? It requires the responsible party, right, of a spill of a substance, again, that might pose a threat to public health or the environment, to notify DNR. DNR will take a look at that notification, probably make a preliminary determination as to whether or not an actual threat exists, right? And then we'll issue, if a threat does exist, right, what's called a responsible party letter. Hey, person, you're responsible for this spill, right? Now, if there's an emergency or something like that, DNR can also issue emergency orders or take action of itself. But if there is no threat, then no further action is required, you know? So it's this whole idea that if it may pose a threat, right? So it's not even that it is like currently threatening. It is a way to notify DNR of potential threats so that they can triage those, right? Determine what are actually threats, prioritize, and do all of that. But if there is no threat, say you spill a little bit or even, you know, half a gallon of gas at the gas pump and you report that to DNR, well, guess what? It's on an impermeable surface that can be kind of cleaned up and the rest is likely to evaporate. Not much of a threat there, right? And no need to go through the rest of the process. But so there's situations where it could even pose a threat in the short term, but not in the long term, and doesn't require that. But if DNR issues a responsible party letter, then that party is supposed to conduct a site investigation to determine the full scope of contamination, both on and around the property where the spill occurred. And then they identify different options for cleaning that up and identify their preferred option. And DNR will ultimately approve that if they execute it properly, they can close the case. But importantly, the goal of remediation under the spills law is not to make it like the spill never happened, right? Mm-hmm. Because that would basically be impossible for responsible parties to do in many situations. It's simply to restore the environment to the extent practicable and to minimize the harmful effects of a discharge, not only on the environment, but the surrounding public. So, you know, this process takes years and it can certainly put significant costs off on responsible parties. But the whole point of the spills law is to ensure that those responsible are bearing the costs of cleanup and not the general public or municipalities who often can't afford to clean it up, which means that we just have these brownfields around the state, right? And creates an even bigger issue, not only with the human health stuff, but think loss of property tax revenue, for example. It exacerbates, and it's a big problem. So the spills law is fundamental, right? But as I say, it's been running just fine for almost 45 years now, until this recent assault on it by WMC.
By WMC. So we're talking to Rob Lee, who is a staff attorney at Midwest Environmental Advocates, about the spills law, which we just, you did, that was a really good explanation of it. And so now let's move into why it's something, you know, it's something that a lot of us, if we don't work in environmental anything, had not heard of, because like you said, it's been just humming along, existing, protecting us where needed. But now it is in the news because there is a lawsuit brought by WMC trying to undermine its effectiveness, as far as I understand it. So can you give us a little bit more background on the lawsuit, where it is, and like where it is in the process right now?
Sure. I'll start just with what the lawsuit is about, right? And so basically, we see WMC, just to put it in a nutshell there, they're trying to gut the spills law with a procedural argument. They're saying that for DNR to determine that a substance is a hazardous substance, right, that a substance qualifies under that definition, which can depend on all sorts of factors, right, that in order to interpret a substance as qualifying as a hazardous substance, that DNR needs to go through the administrative rulemaking process to do that and create a list, not only identifying those substances, but like the concentrations at which those substances are considered hazardous, right? And so we actually argue that the process that WMC is arguing for, right? Well, we need this process so people know what's going on here. Well, there was a process, and it was 45 years ago in front of the Wisconsin legislature when it enacted this law, right? And specifically chose not to require rulemaking or a list, right? And so our response to that is, right, is if you want to rewrite the spills law, fine, but the appropriate place to do that is in front of the legislature, right? Using that same process, not through the courts or trying to force this determination into the rulemaking process that the legislature clearly didn't want. But Just to get a little bit more specifically, right? DNR is using PFAS, or excuse me, WMC is using PFAS. So an emerging contaminant called per- and polyfluoral alkyl substances that people are really, I think, just starting to become aware of in earnest in the last few years. Highly toxic, yes, useful, but highly toxic, and we're finding them everywhere. Well, DNR has been using the spills law to regulate that, because the spills law has been the only regulatory hook that we've had for several years, yeah. Right? Until we got some standards on the book late last year, right? But we see WMC using PFAS, right? Oh, here's this new substance that always qualified as a hazardous substance. We just didn't know it, right? And sees DNR applying it there. So they're not only arguing that they need to go through the rulemaking process for PFAS, but for all substances they regulate under hazardous substances. So they did win that argument before the Waukesha Circuit Court, but fortunately, and we argued there in favor of, the court did stay that decision. So the spills law is still in effect right now, and DNR is able to implement it, but the state appealed that decision up to the Court of Appeals, like I say, and that decision has currently been briefed and is pending an assignment to a 3-panel judge, and we'll see if they prefer to issue a decision or perhaps send it straight to the Supreme Court, right, for certification. So that's where it is right now, and that's sort of the claims of the case in a nutshell.
And so when we come back from break, Rob Lee will still be here, because I further clarifications, because I think what you just said about PFAS, which is, you know, it's become every, it feels like almost everyone knows what it is, right? Because it was both nationally and in Wisconsin, it's everywhere. It's in almost everything. It's so bad for us. But I would love to dig in a little bit deeper about the rules process, because I'm a little cloudy there as far as what this would actually change and the burden that it would create. But then also just talking about kind of in the legal system, because one thing I don't want to lose sight of, and I know we're not going to get into it too deeply as far as how this also matters to the Wisconsin Supreme Court races as far as environmental cases that do go in front of them that sometimes we lose sight of with all the other cases that we're talking about in this election cycle. So when we come back, Rob Lee, staff attorney at the Midwest Environmental Advocates, will still be here. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
But can't you see I'm calling? I got you. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And we are talking to Rob Lee, who is a staff attorney at Midwest Environmental Advocates, about the spills law in Wisconsin. And it's getting challenged by a WMC lawsuit. And just wanted to follow up so I understand. So what the lawsuit is over is basically trying to argue that the DNR would have to make a list. So it basically puts an additional burden on the DNR to make a list of criteria of what is considered hazardous. And so it's basically limiting how efficiently and quickly they could address a spill or a, you know, toxic like PFAS or something like that. Is that what you were saying?
Sort of. So the definition of hazardous substance in the spills law already sets forth the criteria.
Okay.
Right. And that's sort of the point, right? Like it either fits it or it doesn't. Right. For that, what they want is for DNR to go through the rulemaking process, a process that can take up to 3 years, right, and promulgate a list of substances that fit that criteria. and to identify, in some instances, the concentration at which those substances rise to the level, right? The problem with that is basically how difficult it is to go through the rulemaking process, and it become increasingly more difficult in recent years, thanks to our legislature, right? Mm-hmm. Putting burdens in place to make it basically impossible, right, for DNR to ever be able to recreate its authority under the spills law, the authority it has right now through the rulemaking process, right? They would have to do it piecemeal. It would take forever. There's no guarantee of success. And they would have to anticipate every possible hazardous substance discharge out there. It's impossible. They would never get the flexibility that they enjoy right now, right? One of the purposes of the spills law, they would basically never get it back.
Well, go ahead.
Rob, a texter from the 414 has a comment at 844-967-2789. It appears that this lawsuit by the WMC challenging the spills law, or just to put it another way, the WMC may be asking that businesses have the right to spill without any cost or repercussions. And that's certainly the way that I read it. And I wanted to ask you, so who's the latest one in Wisconsin who spilled something?
Well, I if you went and looked at that, right, I mean, there are thousands of active spill sites right now. And I think over its lifetime, the spills law has led to the remediation and closure of something like 30,000 sites, right? So whatever the most recent one is, I don't know right off the top of my head. But certainly we see big discharges all of the time, right? I think one of the biggest ones in the PFAS realm, right, are what we see up around Tyco, fire mm-hmm. products in Marinette and Peshtigo. That's a pretty salient one. And members from that community are part of our client group there. Same thing over in La Crosse in the French Island area. Mm-hmm. And individuals are members of the organizations that are part of our client group there. Wausau, Madison, Milwaukee, Rhineland, like the communities throughout the state with PFAS contamination abound, and we're only finding more. So it's pretty scary out there, right? And if successful, this lawsuit would seriously hamstring DNR's ability to help these communities in a variety of ways, from simply providing bottled water and interrupting exposure pathways, to substances that are so toxic, we're talking about a drop in like 40 Olympic-sized swimming pools, if not even more toxic, right? Interrupting that exposure pathway, identifying these responsible parties, and requiring them to clean it up, right? So they can go back and use their wells or just feel comfortable playing in the creek or whatever it is, right? So, but that other point about businesses not like, don't have to pay to clean it up. I think that's right in the short term. But I think part of the problem with this lawsuit is that it's short-sighted, right? Certainly it could get them out of liability in the near term, maybe under the spills law, but that contamination is likely to remain and their liability for it may still remain. And all they're doing is building up more risk. What happens when the EPA comes in and starts over promulgating and regulating these sites? Do they think it's going to be a windfall then? Right? Because it's likely going to cost more. And guess who's not going to have to pay for that? WMC. It'll be the businesses, their members, and those people, right, who are already probably trying to figure it out anyway, right? And they're just putting them, they're just kicking it further down the road. But I don't think this will ultimately allow them to escape. I think it's just going to hurt more.
Absolutely. Well, with the 2 minutes we have left, I guess, knowing that this is in the courts, it's getting appealed, it could end up in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, TBD on when that would happen. But as far as for the average person who is not involved in the lawsuit, is there a call to action or anything that people can be aware of, something that they can do in the meantime?
Well, I think, right, we are participating as friends of the court at the court level, right? And, you know, we're putting all the arguments there. But one aspect of this case, too, right, is to raise the alarm about what WMC is up here in this deregulatory effort trying to gut the spills law. And certainly they can be tried in the court of public opinion as well, right? And it matters where people and businesses spend their dollars. That's where WMC gets their power. And so people just need to educate themselves and think critically about that. I think it's super important, but that's something they can do right now, a change that they can make in their life, right? And this isn't the only issue, right, that yeah. WMC is on the wrong side of. So,
no, really? Rob Lee said it first. No, that is certainly true. And again, this is something that it's complicated, but I think seeing what happened in Ohio raises an alarm of how that is such on a extreme level of how badly things can go, but even more important to keep the laws that are protecting us from hazardous material in place. So Rob Lee, thank you so much for joining us today. We will link all that information to our show notes. But thank you for joining us. Good luck in the lawsuit.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
All right. When we come back, we will be talking to Jenny Dilberti from Milwaukee County Zoo. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Manor. Which version is that?
That is from the movie.
Oh, from what?
The Lion King.
Oh, that's actually from Lion King.
That's from the Lion King. Yeah, the film.
All right.
Yeah, animated one.
There you
yeah.
go. All right. Well, that song can mean only one thing. Jennifer Dilberti Shea is back, and we're going to talk about the Milwaukee County Zoo is hiring. You could work at the zoo, which sounds pretty fun for a summer job.
It does. And you know what's so funny is I asked one of our managers about the hiring event. And I said, what is the message you want to get, like, for people that work here? And he's like, we have fun. And I, you know, it sounds kind of like a pat answer, but it's really true. I think when I think back on when I was 16 and 17, you know, there wasn't always the option of working at the zoo. You had to be a Milwaukee County resident, things like that. And so I feel like when I see these kids working here, they really form friendships and bonds with each other. And it is a wonderful place. It's a wonderful setting for people, you know, to have their first job maybe. And you get to see the animals, you get to work outside in a lot of cases. So really a lot of benefits to working at the zoo.
So what are I'm assuming that you're not hiring people who actually are working. I think it takes a little more expertise than a summer job to be like working with the monkeys.
Most definitely.
Yeah, or the rhinos. Or, I mean, right. Unless, maybe if you're picking up poop, that would be a more appropriate summer job.
Yes, exactly. You don't get to even do that.
Yes.
Like you say, we have positions in the areas of like concessions and merchandise. So those are our gift shops, our restaurants, some of the different food locations throughout the park. They might also work events, which is we have a whole group sales department that helps organizations rent out the zoo. So that is another area. Ticket sellers, ride operators. So you might be someone who takes tickets and works in the train area or the carousel area or the Zoomobile. So there's really a lot of different niches, I guess you could say, on zoo grounds that, you know, wherever you think you fit best, you can come into these hiring events on the 23rd and the 29th. And then we'll have all of the managers there for walk-in interviews. And they might even hire people on the spot. It depends on the different areas, whether they're able to do that, but that is the possibility.
And so what is, like, from right now in the winter months to being fully staffed in the summer, what is the swing as far as how many people will be working there in the summer versus year round?
Oh gosh, it's probably more than half. So I would say in these like winter months, it's probably 50 to 60 people. And then I believe in the summer we can go as high as 125 to like 130, you know, and those are the seasonal positions. So like you say, we can take people starting anywhere, you know, from April, and then they can work probably through September. And it depends too, because a lot of times we'll get high school students that may be able to stick around with us for a little bit longer. College students, unfortunately, a lot of times they leave us in August, which is a little bit sad for us because then, you know, obviously our levels go down. But people should keep in mind that this is a job, you know, perhaps if you start here in high school, you could work through college. A lot of people here are in college right now, and they'll work when they're able to.
And certainly, Jenny, I would think if anyone is interested in zoology or any of the many offshoots, you know, what a great place to start working, just to talk to some of the zoologists, talk to some of the animal caretakers. I think it's just a great opportunity.
Right. And that is a good point. There are several people on grounds now that I'm thinking of who started on in our grounds department, which is horticulture. So they make sure all of the flowers and, you know, ornamental decorations and things like that are all, you know, looking wonderful, which our grounds are just, they get so many compliments. But some of those people, actually, one of them is now a curator here. And another one is actually our special events coordinator. So, you know, we don't want to promise that. But like you say, if you're in that environment, and you have a passion for that, you know, I guess you can always have hope that maybe if you stick around, there will be other opportunities available if you want to work with the animals. But again, we don't want to promise that, but the environment certainly lends itself to staying here a long time.
And so, as you said before, do you have to be a Milwaukee resident? Still?
You do not.
Okay,
you do
so
not need to be a Milwaukee County resident. Correct. You do need to be 16 years old. And then, like I say, for the hiring events, that takes place from 10 until 6, both days, the 23rd and the 29th. And that's in our Zufari Center, which is the conference center that's just east of the zoo. And all that information is on our website, milwaukeezoo.org.
Great. We're talking to Jennifer Delberti Shea, who is the Public Relations Communications Director at the Milwaukee County Zoo. And we, besides the hiring event, there's also Egg Day coming up, right?
Yes. So that's our Easter event, which will take place on April 8th. It's the day before Easter. And we're excited because obviously this is one of the first years that we're kind of back up 100% for the activities. So kids can take part in kind of an Easter egg trail that they're going to pick out some of the Easter eggs that are hidden along this trail. They can also make different crafts like Easter bunny ears, an Easter basket. They can get their face painted. And then a lot of our animals, I'm trying to think how many, probably 6 different areas of animals will get different enrichment items. So those are going to be paper mache eggs that they can, you know, roughhouse with. They can tear apart. And then there'll be different treats for the different species. So the lions will get a certain kind of treat. Prairie dogs would get something else. Pigs would get something else. So that's kind of a neat, like, backdrop that people can enjoy during Egg Day as well.
And it's sponsored by Racine Danish Kringles.
It is.
I love that.
Yeah. Yes. So perfect. And the thing is, they've been a longtime sponsor for us. And so we really appreciate their support. You know, being a county-run institution, we're always looking at our budgets. And we couldn't do some of these events without the sponsor and without our volunteers as well.
You guys have amazing events throughout the course of the year. And I know a couple of years ago, Jenny, you and I were in doing the behind the scenes kind of thing at the zoo where we got to go into where they fixed the trains. And I'm telling you, if you want to take a job at the zoo this summer, do it. Be a ticket taker at the train.
Oh,
because those little kids are so excited. They are so excited. And it's just such a joyful place.
It is. And like you say, just before you even said joyful, I was like, it is. It's really like so much joy. I mean, throughout the zoo, but like you say, the train, you met some of those, you know, people, some of the engineers and some of the managers over there. And I mean, they just tell me like, well, we get paid to work on trains and to drive trains. It's like, oh my God. Like, I just tell them like, don't let the word out. You know what I mean? Because it's like, they just enjoy what they do. And like you say, it's just a really happy sort of place as well. And we also have people over there that started here, you know, as ticket takers for the train or the carousel. And a couple of them are managers.
Wow.
Now they've made it through high school and college. And, you know, the timing is always, you know, something to, I guess, be aware of, because obviously some of the people that have been here a long time, you know, they do get ready to retire, or they retire and then these spots kind of open up as well. So we have people here that have been here like 20 years, 30 years, because it's such a great place to work.
That was going to be my next question. I was like, who's been there the longest?
Well, but Jenny, you've been there a long time too.
I have. I'm coming up on my 25th.
Oh, wow.
Anniversary.
Were you always in public relations?
I was.
Okay.
Yes. I got lucky enough to get this job. And my supervisor is one of the longest tenured people here. She's been here almost 35 years.
Wow.
So like you say, when people get in here, they tend not to leave, which is, I guess, a really, it's a great thing, right? Because, of course, you could always maybe take a job at a for-profit organization, but there's something to, I think, something special. And this, you know, goes to the seasonal people as well, is that you're working for a conservation oriented organization, sustainability, the animals. I mean, it's a really, really good mission and vision that I think people will go that extra mile to work for.
Well, it's just such a hallmark. I mean, I think whenever you have an organization that has people who work there for a very long time,
It's not like they're trapped there.
Yeah, it's a sign as far as it's a good place to work. Jenny, is there any other, besides Egg Day on April 8th, any other spring events people should put on their calendars?
Sure. Well, Mother's Day, which comes up in May, all mothers are going to receive free admission to the zoo, which is a really nice perk.
Do you have to bring your kids to prove that you're a mother?
You don't. You don't. I know, because it's always a question. We do. We're that nice, right? We just trust them. Yes. So no, you don't. And actually, I probably shouldn't say this, but it's kind of funny. We've had mothers come in that are mothers to be, and they're like, well, I'm pregnant, so can, and we're like, absolutely, go on in. So don't pretend, right? I mean, you have to be truly pregnant. But yeah, so that's a really nice opportunity for free admission for people. And then we also have our summer exhibit, which is going to be Journey to the Ice Age. So it's going to show some of the extinct creatures that were here during the Ice Age. And that starts May 20th. So things like a saber-toothed tiger, a woolly mammoth, some of those animals that were here before we were, they're all reconstructed and they're electronic. They make noises. So that'll be our summer exhibit that people can watch out for as well.
Oh, that's going to be huge.
Well, and are they to scale? Because I think people don't realize how much bigger a woolly mammoth was than an elephant. And elephants are massive. Like, they're my favorite animal. But like, woolly mammoths were like exponentially larger, right?
Right, right. And they have those really super long tusks and whatnot. Yes, yeah, so they're all to scale. They're all, you know, scientifically accurate in terms of the colors and things like that. So we're getting ready. Actually, the animals come in the third week in April, second week in May. They'll be coming in, so people can get ready for that. And it goes all the way until Labor Day.
Oh,
so
nice.
That's for the summer, which is nice. And then, you know, we're hoping obviously our animals like our bears, for example, are waking up now. They were in hibernation, so they've been spotted on exhibit, the grizzlies, the brown bears. They're kind of groggy, but by mid-April, they should all be up, which is kind of fun because we miss them when they're sleeping. and then the prairie dogs, we actually have a new group of prairie dogs that came in late last fall. Six of them. And that's one of the favorite exhibits at the zoo. If people remember, we've had them in the past and now they're here. They have a really nice renovated outdoor exhibit.
Speaking of Mother's Day, are we on baby watch at all at the zoo for anybody?
Oh, gosh. Possibly. In the North American area, we might have one of the harbor seals.
Ooh.
Might be pregnant. Yeah, which is very cool. So those are typically born late May, early June. So that would be a nice summer baby. I'm trying to think if there's anybody
baby
else.
Baby seal, very cute.
Yes. And then we're hoping actually to get in another seal as well. So that would be a younger, I believe he's a male coming in. And so that would be for breeding purposes down the road. So we're always, you know, our curators are always, you know, having their eyes and ears open in terms of what animals, you know, we would like to have here. And so they do a wonderful job. So hopefully you'll see some new things this summer as well.
Absolutely. And the circle of life, pour one out for Gordy the groundhog that died recently. But he lived a good life. So, Jenny Delberti, thank you so much for joining us. We'll put all that information on our show notes today. Go work at the zoo. It sounds super fun.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you
so much.
We'll be right back.
Bye. Near the village, the peaceful village, the lion sleeps tonight.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And we are rounding out the lunch hour of our Tuesday show.
I just want to share, we just had a caller. And you can check in anytime at 844-967-2789. We did address with Jenny Delaberti from the zoo about the loss of Gordy the groundhog.
Yeah.
And this nice man wanted to know what happened to Gordy. I don't believe it was suspicious circumstances surrounding Gordy's death. But unfortunately, he called right after we cut Jenny loose. So I told him to call the zoo. I'm sure someone at the zoo can
I'm sure
him.
Someone at the zoo. I think Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did write an article on March 9th when it happened. But I'm sure it was old age.
I don't know that groundhogs, I mean, do they live more than 5 years? Seems like a long time.
Here we go. In an announcement, the zoo said that Gordy had been acting lethargic and wasn't interested in eating.
Oh, that's never
zoo
good.
Medical staff found that there was fluid around Gordy's lungs and determined that it was likely the result of a cancerous tumor that had ruptured.
Oh.
Poor guy.
Well, now we know.
Now we know.
And rest R.I.P. Gordy.
Poor Gordy.
He's in a better place.
Yeah. Now we have to see who his successor will be and if they will, you know, what name they will give him. That's a good, they should have a naming competition if there's a new baby groundhog.
Do. Oh, yeah. They're big on naming
contests.
Yeah, it's really fun. We were so lucky to have our zoo.
I know. That makes me want to go. Like whenever Jennifer's on, I feel like it's like my motivation to have a zoo day, because I have not been back to the Milwaukee County Zoo since I moved back to Wisconsin.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, there's a bucket list.
Bucket list. Nothing, take our niece.
Another thing
go
for the
fun
list.
Day at the zoo. We'll maybe wait till it's a little bit warmer.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. So on this day in 2006, Jack Dorsey sent out the first ever tweet.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That both feels like not long enough ago, but also very long.
A long time ago.
So do you have any idea what his first tweet was?
Is this working?
Close.
Really?
It says, just setting up my Twitter, but Twitter didn't have any vowels. It was just T-W-T-T-R.
Twitter didn't have any vowels when it started?
No, he just spelled Twitter without vowels.
Oh, okay.
So just setting up my Twitter. And that was the first tweet ever by Mr. Jack Dorsey. And look at it now.
Yeah, look at it now.
And so I thought we would do some Twitter trivia that I stole from Morning Brew. But let's see, Jade, if you can, and you can play along at home if you would like to text. We probably can't take your calls fast enough because Jane's also playing. But 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY if you want to text your answers in or comment on the live stream. If you can remember who tweeted each tweet.
All right, this is intriguing.
All right, so number one. Next, I'm buying Coca-Cola to put the cocaine back in it.
Oh, that's Elon.
Yeah. That was a pretty good one. Number two. This is what happens when you don't recycle your pizza boxes.
Oh, Greta.
That was
Greta Thunberg.
That was Greta Thunberg in response to Andrew Tate after he had tried to troll her with his Bugattis.
Yeah.
And she said, email me at smalldickenergy.whatever. And then he got arrested. and I'm pretty sure he's still in jail.
He is still in jail.
In Romania. In Romania.
Well, I'm sure the Romanian jails are lovely this time of year.
And that was her response because he had had some kind of follow-up video to her response where he had a Romanian pizza. There was all the idea that he had outed himself because he had ordered from this Romanian pizza.
Yeah, it was a thing of beauty. That was a beautiful moment on Twitter.
All right, number three. We did it at Joe Biden.
Oh, Kamala.
That was Kamala. I didn't realize she tweeted it. Obviously, there's the video of her saying it.
Yep.
We did it, Joe.
Yep.
We did it.
After she was out for a run, I think.
I think so. She was doing something. All right, number four. You're crushing it so far.
Thanks.
Look at your pop culture knowledge, Jane Madnair.
I'm full of useless things.
All right, number four. Hey, guys, want to feel old? I'm 40. You're welcome.
Macaulay Culkin.
God, I would not have guessed that one. You got it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Macaulay Culkin.
Wow.
Because
he's the Home Alone kid.
He's the Home Alone kid. So I don't know. I don't know if this is this last year or a couple years ago.
He's 40 years old.
I should also say these are all among the top 30 most liked tweets ever.
Oh.
So that's why they've
jumped to the top.
I think they were news-making tweets in and of themselves. They aren't just totally arbitrary.
Okay.
And I don't know if you're going to get this last one. I would not have gotten this last one. But it just says, love you, purple heart emoji. And you is spelled with just the letter.
Just the letter. Love you. So it's Prince-related.
Is it?
It's purple.
I don't know. It just says purple. It's just a purple heart.
Can you give me a hint?
It's a member of a boy band.
Justin Timberlake.
No. Yeah, you're not going to get this one.
Okay.
I would not get this one either. It's J-Hope of BTS.
Okay, never heard of him.
The Korean boy, like, superstar.
I know the band, yeah.
I've heard of BTS. If you held a gun to my head, I could not tell you. But now I can. Now I know one of them is named J-Hope. But prior to that, I could not have told you a single one of their names.
And there's a bunch. I mean, aren't there like seven of them?
I think they broke up, too.
Oh.
I think they're all doing like individual records. I think
solo
I
feel projects. Like
that is a group that only slips into my consciousness through
side
reading
channels
of the news in general. This is not information that I seek out when it comes across. Like, oh, let's go down. I've never gone down a BTS rabbit hole. Let's put it that way. But you crushed it. 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5
that's pretty good.
That's not too bad. I'm pretty happy with myself.
Yeah. So for better or for worse. On this day.
Momentous.
Would that be 17 years ago?
Wow.
Jack Dorsey gave us Twitter. But I would say overall it has been a good. I mean, I don't know. It's, you know, I think tomorrow, we were going to talk about today and then we bumped it. But maybe with Greg tomorrow, we'll talk about, you know, there's an increasing push on banning children, like 16 and younger, from being on social media at all.
Right.
There's a bill that's been proposed. There's lawsuits, and there's multiple different lawsuits. I don't know how you would go about doing that, especially as we talk about, you know, I've publicly lamented that I do not want TikTok to be banned. I've publicly lamented that I feel like it sucks that Twitter is doesn't feel like I can't put my finger on why, but just doesn't feel as good since Elon took it over. And so like I like social media. I rely on it. I also understand that it probably isn't the always
healthiest.
The best on my mental health. But we're gonna have that debate tomorrow as far as what should we do with kids when it comes to social media. But yeah, 17 years we've had this little bird app.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for the memories, Jack. All right, when we come back, Representative Mark Pocan will be here. We're going to have some fun with him, but also talk about the serious topic of why Medicare Advantage is a scam and we should change the name. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Kiss.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.